If you don't know me, my name is Patrick, and I'm just a staff pastor here at Oak City. And if I don't know you, I'd love to meet you. Come say hey to me after the service. That'd be great. While these guys get set up, let me just kind of tell you what we're doing. We are in the second week of a series that we do every August called Where's God When Life Happens? And we just take a look at some pretty intense, in a lot of cases, personal stories that folks have been through and ask that question, where was God when this was going on? And in a lot of cases, those are really intense and personal and really related to the specific person who we're talking to. Today we're talking about something that affects a lot of people. It's something that we don't talk about much, that our culture doesn't talk about much in general. We're going to talk about miscarriage this morning. Which we will define as when a woman loses a baby in the womb before the baby is born, when the baby dies in the womb before it's born. It's interesting because as common as it is, we don't talk about it, but it is a really common thing. If you look nationally, they say, depending on where you look, one out of every four or five pregnancies ends in miscarriages, so 20 or 25%. Here at Oak City Church, we did the math, and in the last 12 months, we've had 17 babies born. Good job. And but in that time, we've also had 9 miscarriages. And so that puts us at a 1 out of every 3. So 33% of the pregnancies in the last year here at Oak City have ended in miscarriage. And those are just the ones that we know about. And we're certain that there are others out there that we don't know about. So the number is probably higher than that. As always, we assume that there are different types of people here this morning. We would assume that, you know, if you were like I was 3 or 4 years ago, then you almost never think about miscarriage. You don't feel anything related to it. It's just something that happens to people and it doesn't affect you, and so you don't think about it much. There are other people who we know are here who have never experienced a miscarriage themselves or their spouse, and but they still have a lot of strong feelings about it, and they know a little something about it because they've chosen to walk through it with a friend or maybe a sibling who's experienced a miscarriage. And so we know there's people here like that. We also know that there's people here who know a lot about miscarriage, who are intimately acquainted with what miscarriage is like because you've had one. Experience one yourself. So I guess no matter where you are this morning, we hope today is meaningful and helpful and maybe eye-opening for you. So I also just want to say this before we get started. If you're a Christian, then there's a potential that miscarriage is difficult for you in a way that miscarriage is not difficult for someone who's not a Christian. And there's a reason for that. That's because if you're a believer in God and you have trusted him and you know him through what Jesus did on the cross, through the gospel, then we assume certain things are true about you. We assume that you know that God is a good father and that God is good all the time, and that never changes. And so we assume that you believe that to be true. We also assume that you know and believe that God just is God. And God is in control, and God knows everything, and there's nothing outside of his knowledge or his control. And so if you've got God who's in control and God who's good, then in that context, miscarriage can be difficult because it doesn't seem like babies should die in the womb if God is good and God is in control of everything. And so miscarriage can be tough. Kids, in my experience, kids are one of the most amazing blessings you can have. They're incredible. And so I'll just say at the beginning that something seems off if you're a Christian and you have a miscarriage because you know God is good and God is in control. So it can be tough for those reasons. I don't think there's a perfect answer for that, and we're not going to get to one today, but I just want to say that from the get-go. This is Katie.
Everybody
Hi. Say, hey, Katie.
Hi. If we're going to interview two couples, Josh and Emily Mitchell and Brent and Melissa Jordan, if you guys could come up here. And I want to put it out there, their stories are similar in a lot of ways, different in a lot of ways, but the thing that I want you guys to hear is how each of them has processed it differently, and someone who's not miscarried before, I have learned a lot about how real this loss is, and so even if you have not been there and you're not connected to this personally, I ask that you listen with an open mind and an open heart. And on that note, Melissa, if you wouldn't mind sharing your story with us.
Yep. Hi, everyone. Patrick. Brent and I have two awesome kids, Everly, 6, and Arlo is 5. And our journey into parenthood was one that was fairly effortless and pretty fortunate. We decided to have a baby and we got pregnant. And our son was a complete surprise. Our kids are 16 months apart, so we literally had them back to back, and we're really blessed by that. And we're in the thick of parenthood for a couple years, and wanted to have a third. I've always wanted 3 kids. It's just been when I picture kind of our complete family, that's always been what I pictured. And so we started trying in 2014 to have another baby, and really naively assumed that it would be as easy as the first two, and it wasn't. It took us a year and a half to get pregnant. And that in of itself was really challenging and frustrating, but we were really excited in July of 2015 to find out we were pregnant again. And we really went into it just assuming we would have another healthy pregnancy like the first two. And I went for an ultrasound at about 7.5 weeks and was told that things did not look really good. The baby was measuring really small. The heartbeat was slow. And there was a couple of scenarios. Maybe I got my dates wrong, but that there was also a strong possibility of miscarriage. So I had actually gone to that appointment by myself and called Brent after it, pretty upset. And we prayed over it and really hoped for the best. And then we went back together at about 9 weeks, and there was no heartbeat. And I processed that news incredibly internally. I actually cried very little. I mean, I was really upset on the way home, but in the days and weeks afterwards, I just felt like I was in a black hole of emotionless. I didn't really want to talk about it. I had, you know, some home group friends and some friends that, you know, reached out, but I really retreated and did not process it really much at all. Just kind of sat in that dark place. And during the course of this too, I should also say, right after we found out that this was happening, we had planned for a DNC, and before I could get in for the DNC, I hemorrhaged really badly and scarily at home at our house.
And Brent, you were actually not at home when this happened. You were here at the church.
Right. Yeah, I was at the church. We were some of the guys and I were spending the night for Win Week when we host some wonderful families here that spend the week at the church. And Melissa called and said that she was bleeding a lot and scared. And we ended up in the emergency room overnight. And it was a really lonely and scary feeling, being that it was a time of night when there wasn't much staff at the hospital. There were not many other people at all. So they, some very sweet nurses took Melissa back, and then I was waiting in a waiting room completely by myself. Almost seemed like a dream because there was nobody there. It was this weirdness. And it passed the time that they said they'd come out and get me by a lot, and there was nobody there to talk to. So this fear crept into my head that it went from the pain and the shock of losing a baby to my God, I just want my wife to be okay now. I want to bring the mother of our children home to them. So there was a lot of fear, but God is good, and luckily I was able to take their mother home to them. But
so after a while, you started trying again. I mean, you healed up, and it was a few months, but you started trying again.
Yeah, I took some comfort in thinking that our crummy odds were behind us. I wouldn't say a lot of comfort, but in my mind, I thought, okay, you know, 1 in 4, like, this was our one, and we have good chance of going to have a healthy baby. So we started trying again about 5 months later, found I was pregnant again. And we're really excited, but also far more cautiously hopeful about things. during this time we had gotten a reproductive specialist involved. Given the fact it had taken us so long to get pregnant and then losing a baby, we decided to try to just get someone to kind of help us figure out what was going on. And I knew incredibly early that I was pregnant the second time. And a couple weeks passed, and about 6.5 weeks I had some bleeding, and it just brought everything back up that had happened the first time. And I was completely panicked and hysterical and called them. Britt and I drove out there and had an ultrasound, and I got this beautiful news that everything was just as it should be. The baby was the right size, and the heartbeat was really strong, which I really leaned on that, because that had not been the case the first time. And so I took so much comfort in this strong heartbeat that I saw on the screen. And we went home just on cloud nine. We just thought that it was an answered prayer. And I traveled for work the next week. I just, I was in a much better place. And we went back at 8 weeks for another check-in. The way these fertility places tend to work is that once you have a confirmed, healthy pregnancy, they kind of just pass you back to your OB. So this is what that appointment would have been for us. And I sat there with a sheet over me waiting for her to find a heartbeat for what felt like hours. And I remember just staring at the screen and just willing there to be a heartbeat, and there wasn't one. And she said, "I'm sorry." And she and the nurse left the room, and Brent and I were left in there alone. And I was just so beyond devastated that I didn't know where I was going to find the power to get dressed and leave. Like, I literally remember thinking, like, I don't even want to go anywhere ever again. Like, this is it. I'm just going to live in this room forever, because I couldn't even figure out how I was going to take the next step. But we got in the car, and I'm a pretty even-keeled person. Rarely, like, out loud angry about anything, but I raged on the way home in a way that I've never raged about anything. I was kicking the dashboard and screaming at the top of my lungs, and I was just so angry and shocked and destroyed. And I came home, and I just put a blanket in the backyard, and I just laid there for the rest of the day.
Brent, here you are, and your wife is broken, and yet you've got kids that need to be picked up from school.
Right. Yeah, there's we're both pretty devastated. But Melissa is devastated in a way that I'm not and probably can't be. And I have to, like you said earlier, keep the trains on the tracks of carpool and ballet and making meals for the kids and playing with them, like finding the energy to play and to have joy with them so they're not aware of this. We hadn't told the kids, and so it was a hard spot to be in, actually. So
I was pretty adamant I wanted a DNC as soon as possible. I didn't want to go through the physical aspects that I had gone through with the first loss. And afterwards, I spent a couple days just in bed, just mindlessly watching TV and praying and just feeling really confused and upset. And it was a really hard time, because during both of these losses, all around me, my friends were getting pregnant, and I had a couple friends whose due dates were right aligned within a week or two of mine, and my best friend, found out she was pregnant. It was like everybody was pregnant, and I just felt like here I was, so desperate to have a baby, and everyone else could except me. What also made that really hard is that our six-year-old has wanted to be a big sister again since the time she could really talk, even though she had a little brother. She's like, I want more. So she's constantly been asking us to have another baby and would draw pictures of me pregnant next to her. She would ask me about it all the time, "Mommy, please have another baby." And at night when we would say her prayers, she would say, I want to say a prayer quiet to God. And in this little whisper, she would always ask him to please let her mommy have another baby. And there was a time during those prayers I thought I was going to be able to make that happen for her. And it was so hard knowing that, you know, I wanted that, she wanted that. And it wasn't happening for us. So she and I just talked about that we would just pray about it together, that God would answer that prayer for us.
So Brent, obviously you guys are still in a place of processing, but, you know, you'd said to me that you're seeking contentment in this.
I am seeking contentment in being happy and content with what we have, and it's a delicate balance because I, as much joy as the kids give us now, I know how much devastation a loss can bring, and so I want another baby, I do, but it's hard to see the devastation to go through it again. We're just going to rest in God's will, and that's where I'm trying to find contentment and just move myself out of the way, because I sometimes feel like I can't handle the heaviness, but God can. So
thank you guys for sharing your story. Emily, you're just, even logistically, your story mirrors Melissa's in a lot of ways, but if you could just share your story.
You guys, we have two little boys, and we hadn't really had a huge problem getting pregnant. And so when we got pregnant in February, we thought everything was fine. We told everybody. We told our kids. We told their teachers. We told the mail. I mean, I told anyone who would listen to me that, like, we're having a baby. It's coming in November. It's going to be so fun. And, we were really excited, and it was a normal pregnancy. And I was so confident in the fact that everything was going to be normal. I didn't even make my first appointment until I was 11 weeks. And that was my train of thought, was I was sick. I was feeling terrible. So I was definitely going to have a baby. And I went away in April on a girls' weekend, and we all got a stomach bug. And so I came home and had some spotting, and I just thought, well, this is because I've been getting sick. It kind of picked up, and so I looked at Google, which told me that it was totally normal and it was fine, and sometimes it happens. And so I didn't even worry about it. And I called my OBGYN on the way to work one day, just kind of on a whim, and said, hey, I'm having some spotting. What do you think? And she had an appointment that day, which was a Thursday. So Josh was home with the kids, so my sister-in-law came over to watch them, and he met me after work at about 3, and she's always about 15 minutes late, so he was about 15 minutes late, and usually doctor's offices are late, but that day they were very on time, and they were insistent that I go back by myself and just have the ultrasound and check it all out. And so given that this was my third pregnancy, I knew really what to expect, and part of that is how excited the ultrasound techs are to kind of walk you through your baby. And they show you its spine and just little hands, and they want you to see everything. And they're very chatty usually. And she just asked me how far along I was, and confirmed that it was 10 weeks with my chart. And then she didn't say anything else for, like, ever. Just didn't say anything. And she just kept taking measurements or something. And she flipped on the heart rate monitor and flipped it off and didn't look for a heartbeat and kept not saying anything. And when she did that, I knew that that the pregnancy was over. And Josh had came in, I think, right after that, and I was just laying on the table sobbing, and she was still not saying anything. So he's like, very frantic. And we went, and the doctor confirmed that we had lost the baby at 6 weeks, and my body was just starting to process it. And she told us that we could have had, like, a pill to move it along, but she said, it will be too traumatic. You're too far along. You really don't want this to happen. So come back on Monday. So this was Thursday. Come back on Monday, and we'll do a DNC. And I just, that night, I went, I guess my body just started kicking into gear. And so at, like, 11 o'clock, I was like, ooh, something's not right. And I was just really unprepared in a lot of ways for the physicality of that. And I started having really bad panic attacks, and which I'd never had. And I was just getting hot and cold, and I was feeling like I was going to throw up and pass out, and I couldn't catch my breath. I was just freaking out. And I woke up Josh, which I never do, and he took care of me for about 5 hours.
And you were, Josh, you were sent on a midnight run?
Yeah, she never wakes me up for anything, so I knew that she woke me up that that this was probably significant. So I went to Walgreens at 3 o'clock in the morning, and probably looked pretty rough. I meandered back to the pad aisle, and I just stood there kind of like, you know, rubbing my eyes like, oh, dear God, what am I going to do? And so I flagged down one of the guys stalking, and I said, hey, man, come on, I need your help. I said, I need to know which ones are your most absorbent pads. And we didn't, eye contact ended at that point, and we just kind of looked together. And he said, let me get my manager. And, like a ghost, he poof, he disappeared. I never saw him again. And so there was, you know, it was a lot of, I'm not sure I went back to sleep that night. I think I just stayed up, and with the hemorrhaging that she was having, you know, as an ICU nurse, I was worried. She was just real sweaty and pale, and she did not look well. So fortunately, my boys had preschool, so I got my kids to school, and I came home, and somehow she'd gotten herself dressed. I don't know how she did that. And then passed out from getting herself dressed. So I called 911, and then she popped up. She rallied. She's like, I'm good, I can do it. And I was like, oh, great, I already called the ambulance. So we made it to... I canceled the ambulance, which is, you can't do that, apparently. They showed up anyway. And we made it to the hospital, and I was fairly confident once we got there that, you know, that things would be fine, but I was concerned enough to go, which is probably like my last resort. Yeah.
So everything went okay, and you come home. Tell us where you were just in the emotions of it all.
Yeah, I think I just came home sort of in a cloud. It was kind of out of body experience. And I remember my sisters and my mom were trying to figure out who was coming. And I was like, don't come, it's from Boone. You guys never leave the mountain. Like, I'll be fine. And my little sister was like, I'm coming, and I'm coming, so don't tell me not to come. And she did, she came and took care of me and made enough food for a small country. But me, I just kind of was like feeling really, which this was a surprise to me, was just embarrassment. I didn't know that was going to come with a miscarriage, and I just felt really embarrassed that we had told everyone in the world. I was really embarrassed just at how naive I was to think everything would be fine, and I was really embarrassed at the amount of grief I was like feeling. And I kind of rationalized myself out of feeling it, just saying, like, you've been through grief with people, and this was a baby. And I put it in quotes, but that I'd only known for two months. He'd only been in my belly for 2 months, and I'd only known him through my hopes and my prayers and just the thoughts of how he was going to be in our family. And I'd never held him or loved him or smelled him or birthed him. So I was just embarrassed that I felt so much over that, and I felt really isolated, and you know, I kept telling myself, like, one in four, you're not alone, but I felt really alone. And you know, I had text messages from all my Meredith girlfriends that we love you, but I just couldn't say the words. I just was paralyzed, like totally paralyzed. I didn't want to tell our small group because we had just started going, and I didn't want to like be people with drama. I didn't want to go there. And I kept thinking, I'm going to call Katie. I'm going to call Gretchen. And I just couldn't. And so I did what in my mind made sense. And I put something on Instagram. And just immediately, I think, got texts from people and calls and what can we do to help. And I was still really like nothing, and I didn't want any help. And I remember Gretchen, she texted and she said, well, I'm coming over, so I'll be there in a couple, you know, in a little bit. And that was a Sunday night, and she came and brought me. I think she just went to Target and bought everything that she thought would make me happy. And she just stood on my front porch and cried with me. And I hadn't really processed there or gone there really until she just wept with me. And it was so, sorry, it was just so giving of her to show me that grace, and so I guess freeing for me to finally like feel that and to go there where I was really not letting myself. So yeah.
Josh.
So I mean, I still had two boys to take care of. I still had to go get them from school. I still had to make sure people ate dinner. You know, we had, you know, it was just this, my emotions were so different from Emily's. I mean, I was just I was sad. I was very disappointed, but it wasn't just as real and physical and horrifying like it was for her. You know, I had to try to let her, I was just trying to keep things off of her plate, really, just to keep the boys away. I think we went out to dinner with my parents and stayed out of the house and just, you know, try to, I don't know. I didn't know what to do. I just really didn't know what to say or what to do. You know, I tried, you know, Lucas was four at the time. And, of course, we had told him and he was so excited. And he was going through the birthdays. So he's like, well, my birthday's next. And then it's Daddy's birthday. And then it's Halloween, which isn't a birthday. And he really loves Halloween. And then the new baby's going to come. And we had to say, you know, well, then, you know, the new baby went to be with Jesus. And I just remember him saying, you know what? I didn't want Jesus to take our baby. And so just trying to absorb that somehow and keep Emily from having to, you know, be sad for her, you know, feel the way she felt and then have to, you know, endure just that such heavy from a four-year-old. That was really hard to do. Is there something else I was supposed to say?
Sorry, I'm trying to collect myself. One, you had talked about how because you couldn't connect, you were grateful for people stepping
in. Oh, yeah.
In.
Oh, absolutely. You know, because I just felt so powerless to do anything for her, I was so grateful for, you know, her sister coming down and for Gretchen and for, you know, the folks that just came alongside and said, you know, we will help carry you through this. We would not have come out the same, I don't think, without them.
And although your new home group, or your home group was new, they really did rally behind you in the church, you know, your church family really stepped in. But Melissa and Brent, your situation is a bit different and unique in that your home group had gone through, over the past year, incredible loss, and not just once, but there have been multiple losses and multiple new babies. And so you really didn't feel like that was the right place and the right time to unload your grief. And so you looked, met Melissa for a Christian counselor that hopefully had specifically dealt in this area, and you did. You found one. And if you could talk about what you gleaned from that, like the, you know, what you pulled from that time.
Yeah, I felt like pretty quickly after my second loss that I was not going to be able to do what I did the first time and just tucking it away and not addressing it. And I was drowning in grief, and I felt that, you know, God really was pushing me to seek someone one-on-one who could help me work through that. And I wanted someone that both understood the hardship and the heartbreak of infertility, of loss, but also could speak to it from a gospel place as well and help me make sense of my faith and my sorrow. And I found a really fantastic counselor. And one of the first things we talked about, it was my inability to really be vulnerable and to address grief with others. Something I just wanted to push down and hope would just go away. And she talked to me about, you know, one of the shortest verses in the Bible is Jesus wept. And he wept for his friend Lazarus, even though he knew he would bring him back from the dead. He wept, and he was sorrowful for the death of his friend, and that God really designed us to experience grief and to work through sorrow, and that it was okay for me to do that. And that pretty much blew the lid off of my wanting to keep it inside, and I was like sending these long rambling emails to friends and calling them on the phone and just, you know, just talking and talking and talking about it in a way I never had. And I used to blog a long time ago, but I haven't in like 2 years. And I wrote this long thing on my blog and I put things out on Instagram. I just was like, I needed to speak to it. And I really was able to work through a lot of that in counseling.
Pat?
Yeah, that's good. So we want to, well, the title of the series is Where is God When Life Happens, right? And so we want to kind of ask everybody that question, where was God or where is God? I'll speak to that myself, I guess, but talking a little bit about my own family story, and a lot of you guys know this, but my wife, Jessica, and I, we lost our first baby, in a miscarriage at about 6 weeks. Which is really common. A lot of miscarriages happen right at that time. So our story is pretty common, but it really had a big effect on me. We'd been married about 2 years, and we decided we wanted to start trying to have a family. And so we got pregnant pretty quickly, I think about 3 or 4 months. And I was so excited. I was so excited to be a dad, and Jessica was so excited to be a mom. I found the journal that she had during those times, and just reading the things she wrote the day we found out we were pregnant is incredible and really hard to read now, but it was really exciting. We were really into it, and we were right on day one. Jessica was writing in her journal that we spent a lot of time praying for the safety of the baby and that God would keep Jessica safe and the baby safe and keep everyone healthy and all that stuff. I don't know why that was such an emphasis, but it was a huge deal for us. And about 3 days later, she noticed some spotting. And we went to help some friends from our home group move. And that night she got home and just wasn't feeling right. Wasn't really in pain, just didn't feel normal, and said so. I don't know what that meant, but just not feeling right. And then she woke up the next morning and there was a lot of blood. And so we got an appointment that morning, an 11 a.m. appointment that next morning. And so she went to the appointment, and it came straight to meet me over at our old church building off Whitaker Mill. And I asked her how it went, and she said that the doctors did an ultrasound, and it looked okay. The baby was really low. I'm not sure what that means, but the baby was really low and looked really small for 6 weeks. And the doctors gave it about a 50-50 shot that the pregnancy would continue. And so we went to lunch over at El Rodeo on Wake Forest, and then we came back to the building, and she had to run inside to use the bathroom, and right there in the bathroom of the old church building, she passed the baby, and she came out and just looked so sullen, and I said, "What happened?" And she said, "I'm pretty sure I just lost the baby in the toilet," and so I, you know, was really, I did not handle it well. I was really upset, and I remember driving home, and I was so angry. I was just furious, an intense rage that I'd never felt about anything. And I remember standing in my garage, and I had punched the door, which hurt me more than the door, I think. But I remember thinking, I could tear this garage down right now. I really think I could have. And I was just so angry. At God. I called him every name in the book. And where was God during all that? I positionally, for me, God was where he always had been, which is on his throne in heaven. And in control of everything. My problem was that God is different. I learned that God is different than I thought God was. I don't know what I thought God's goodness was like beforehand, but I learned that God's goodness is different than I thought it was. I remember reading the next day, Psalm 119. It's just where I was in my daily reading, and it says this. It says, "You have dealt well with your servant, O Lord, according to your word." So you've dealt well with me, your servant, just like you said you would. "Teach me good judgment and knowledge." Like he doesn't have judgment or good judgment or knowledge. "For I believe in your commandments." And then he says, "You are good and you do good." And I just remember reading that and thinking, God, you said you are good and you do good. And he says, "You have dealt well with your servant just like you said you would." And I remember thinking, you haven't dealt well with me. You just gave my wife a baby like we've been praying for. And all we did for 3 days was pray that this baby would be safe. And then you took it. I don't know what goodness is, but it doesn't look like that. That's what I thought, right? And so what I learned over the course of time was that God is different. God's goodness is different than I thought it was. God was really close to me during that time. I thought about it all the time. It's all I thought about for weeks on end. I'm just kind of grieving and angry. And what God said to me over the course of time was, "I'm not God like you think I am. I'm beyond you. My plan is so much bigger and so much better than yours. You think you know what's good, but you don't know what good is. I routinely do things every single day that I think are good for me that aren't good for me. I routinely do things that I know aren't good for me. But God is good and does good all the time." Hear that. He's good and he does good all the time. And so God was really, really close to me during that time. But for a long time, I was really, really angry about it. So, I don't know. I would ask you guys the same question. Where was God for you guys? Josh, maybe you can go first.
I still felt like God was good. And I don't know if I really stopped to take time and really think about, like, how I really felt about his role in it. You know, like, I felt like he was good and that he was going to take care of us and that, you know, he was going to work things out. You know, I think I was really just preoccupied with taking care of our family, you know, and taking care of my wife as best I knew how, and just trusting that, you know, what I knew about him was still true, and that he was going to take away that disappointment and that sadness and that hurt we were feeling. I just kind of had to hold on to that, I guess.
Yeah, and I'll echo that. Just we have experienced a lot of God's goodness in our life and a lot of his grace in really hard areas. And so I didn't really go to questioning that. I kind of took comfort in the fact that he created us and he made our bodies to do these natural processes. And even though it was so hard and I didn't want it to happen to me, I knew that he created our bodies to process these things and early. I guess I kind of saw it as a mercy that it happened at 10 weeks. But I saw God, and I think mostly palpably, and just in the way that people loved us. And like, I, you know, in the friends that were willing to come over and hug us and cry with us and weep with us, and then the people that brought us food, and in my small group girls that I had only known for a month, you know, making a really beautiful gift for me. And that's kind of where I saw him and where I experienced that goodness and that grace from him.
Melissa and Brent, you guys are, it'd be more accurate probably to ask the question, where is God in it? Where are you with God in it? So if you could attempt to answer that question, it'd be great.
Yes, I, throughout this whole journey, this season, I've felt closer to God than ever. I remember early on in the first miscarriage, being by myself, praying to God, like remembering Jesus' prayer before the cross, to God, take this cup from me. I'd take this cup from me. I don't want it, but if we must go through this, Lord, like, there's no doubt in my mind that you are here with us, and you're going to walk through this pain with us. So there was the noise of the world seemed to disappear a lot more, and things became sharper and focused and crisper, and I just felt his presence in more real ways than I ever have before. And so there's, in this pain, there is a wisdom perhaps that is gleaned that you can't study from a book or anything. And so God's grace has been poured out into us, and we are not alone in this. He's never left us.
I feel like I'm very much still in the thick of this with God. I think the main conversation that we have is me asking him to just take this overwhelming ache for another child away. Just let me find contentment, or help me to understand what you want from me, because it just gets louder and more intense all the time. And so that's a really hard place for me to be right now, because I want to understand why I want this so much, and he hasn't allowed it to happen for me yet. But I also am trying to really listen to where his purpose is in this, and I have saved everything from when my children were babies, everything, because I had planned on having a third and I was going to need it. And over the course of the last months, I've just heard him telling me to give it to someone else, to give it to my best friend. And I really fought him on it. I don't want to. This is my stuff for my baby, and I saved it. But it's just been in my head over and over, just give it to her. She needs it, and you don't right now, and give it to her. And I've come to realize God is working on me in that this stuff is just an anchor in my basement. It's it maybe wasn't saved for the baby I thought it was, but that it does have a purpose and intention there, and that I need to let it go. And so I feel like that's one of the ways that God really is in this with me, is just asking me to trust him and know that, you know, when and if I have the opportunity to be a mom again, that, you know, all of that will be provided. But right now he has other plans for me. So that's just where I am. I'm really hurting, but I'm really hopeful.
I wanted to give everybody a chance to communicate something to our church. And so, I would ask the question, if you had one thing to say to our church body, based on your experience, what would it be? And maybe I will, I'll go first, and then I'll ask you guys. But I would say two things. One, remember who God is. If you've had a miscarriage, or if you're going through any other kind of suffering, just never forget who our God is. He's always in control. He's never not in control. And he's never not good. He is always good all the time. And you can bank on that. And let that be a rock that you stand on in the midst of trial and in the midst of suffering. That God is who he says he is. He's good and he's in control. Number two, remember the gospel. Never forget the gospel. Preach it to yourself every single day, all the time. Remember that God sent his son Jesus into this world. In the world that is wrecked by sin, that at some base level is the reason that miscarriages happen in the first place. God sent his own son into it, and he came into the muck and the mire and the decay that is this world, so that he could fix it, right? He didn't have to do that, but God the Father sent Jesus, his son, to be here. And can you imagine God the Father sending his son, Jesus, into this world? And, you know, we're talking about miscarriage this morning, right? And you guys, I just told my story. We were pregnant for about a week the first time. Our story happens really fast, the actual pregnancy part. And I know how much losing my child messed me up. I know how painful that was for me. When Jesus was on the planet, you know, God was with him, and God was with him here on the earth for 33 years. God the Father with God the Son on the planet for 33 years. Can you imagine then what it must have been like for God the Father to watch Jesus, his son, get arrested? How tough must that have been for him? Because he was right there. Can you imagine what it must have been like for God to watch Jesus, his son, get beaten by those guards and spat upon? And, you know, they pushed the crown of thorns into his head, and God the Father watched that happen to his son. How much must that have hurt? Can you feel the heart of any father in watching that happen to his son? He could have stopped it, but he chose to let it go on. Can you imagine what it was like for God to walk through the streets of Jerusalem with Jesus, his son, carrying the cross on his back? And God just watching that happen as close as we're sitting right here. And he could have stopped it. Can't you just imagine that any father would look at his son and say, I don't want you to go through this. I would take this from you if I could. But God knew that Jesus had to go through that. Can you imagine God standing right next to Jesus, his only son, as they laid him out on the cross and as they spread his arms out? I wonder if God was tempted to reach out and stop him. But he didn't, right? And so God was right there, and he watched him spread his son's arms out, and he watched them line up the nails on his hands. And God stood there and watched while those men picked up the hammers and drove them down on the nails that went through Jesus' hands and feet. Can you just feel the heart of God the Father in losing his son? And he stood there and watched as they lifted him up, and he watched as Jesus died. My heart breaks just thinking about that. My heart breaks when my son goes through any amount of pain. God chose to do that so that he could make us his only children. His children. He did that to his only son to make us his children. Man, God knows what it's like to lose a son. God said that to me so clearly when I was in so much pain. God said, hey, I've lost a son. I know what it's like. And I did it because I love you. And I'm for you. I don't know why God does the things that he does, but remember the gospel. Remember what God has done for us. I don't know why he does things that way. I don't know why he works the way he does. I don't know why he allows miscarriages to happen. I'm not God, and you're not God either. And I know that I don't really control anything on a day-to-day basis. And I know that I'm not good. But God is always in control, and God is always good. And we can bank on that. And he's shown us that by giving up his only son to make us his children. And so we can say with all confidence that no matter what we're going through in any kind of trial, miscarriage or otherwise, that God works together for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purpose. And so I just want to encourage you with that today, and encourage all of us, and encourage my own heart by knowing that God is who he says he is, and remembering what he's done for us in the gospel. And one day this will all make sense. I'm sure that's true. It doesn't right now, and I'm lying if I tell you that it does. But man, there is such a sweetness that comes from knowing that my Father in heaven is for me and he's doing something good, that one day I'll see it. No one could have known the good that came from Jesus being nailed to a cross and dying. But look at what good he's brought from that. He's made us all his family. He's brought us all life and salvation. And so I look forward to knowing what God is working in my life and all of our lives through our trials. So
to you, Melissa and Emily, if there's something that, well, I know that you have something you'd like to share with both sides of this, both the folks in here who have suffered the loss, And those of us, like me, who have been on the sidelines, who haven't experienced it personally, what would you like us to take away, if there's one thing? And Emily, you can go first.
I think for me, in Romans, Paul tells us to rejoice with those who rejoice and to mourn with those who mourn. And there's a lot of rejoicing here in all the babies and that are born here, and there's a lot of them. But we can't not mourn with those who mourn. And it's really uncomfortable, and I've been guilty of just putting my fingers in my ears and acting like I didn't hear it. But if you know that someone has been through miscarriage, and if you know that they've lost that part of them, then you need to mourn with them how in a way that you don't disappear on them, and just in a way that carries their burden. And if you don't know what to say, I would just encourage you to say, "I'm sorry. And I love you." And you don't need to fix their problems, because nothing that you say is going to fix their problem. And you're not going to take away their grief. But you need to acknowledge their grief by loving them. And part of that is, like for us, I didn't even at all grieve probably for a few days. It just wasn't there. And our miscarriage didn't stop that weekend. Our pain from it didn't stop. And I remember we lost our baby on April 8th, and on May 8th, it was Mother's Day, and Josh works on the weekends usually, and so I decided I was not going to come to church. I was going to go to the zoo by myself with the boys, so I didn't have to see everyone getting their flowers and talking about motherhood, and I was not doing it. And I got a text that afternoon from Becca Taylor, and she just said, "Happy Mother's Day. I know that this one's a really hard one for you, and I just wanted to tell you that I love you, and I'm thinking about you." Just being loved and having someone recognize that, like, that's a hard day, and my due date, that's a hard day, and random times when I see my sister-in-law's having a baby right after my due date, like when I see her and I'm excited for her, but, you know, when she found out she was having a boy, just knowing, like, we would know that by now, and those are hard days. And so don't think that, okay, I said it once, I don't have to say it again. If you're really close with someone, walk the whole path of grief with them, and keep following up on them. And to the women who've experienced this, I just want to say, like, wherever you are in it, don't be afraid to go to there, to the grief part, and then don't feel ashamed when you don't feel the sadness every day. I think I was like, I should still be feeling this. And I remember my neighbor came and like hugged me and just wept when she heard my news. And it was like a month later, and I thought I should be like weeping with her, and I wasn't. But don't be, just wherever you are in it, work through that with God, and don't be embarrassed of when you wake up and you feel okay. That's okay too.
I feel like Emily hit the nail on the head with both of those. Really, to any woman who's gone through this, just knowing that, you know, it's a really crummy club to be part of, but it is really common. And the best thing I can tell you is, don't be afraid to grieve and to be vulnerable, and to allow others to carry you through it. If you don't feel able to do it yourself, I really struggled with allowing other people to help me in the beginning. So I would just encourage you to allow yourself to be carried.
So for me, not having been there, it's been really helpful to talk with a lot of women, and I've learned and I've heard a lot of what not to say. And so we actually have a list of things of what not to say. And we don't need to read them. I would encourage you guys to read through them. I can say that I can very vividly remember saying one of these things to a friend with all love and good intention behind it. And the problem with all of these things is that there's major assumptions going on, that you know where they are in processing their grief. And you can't know that, not without asking them. And so, you know, at a minimum, say, I'm sorry and I love you. And if you are close with them, don't hold back out of awkwardness. Dive in and be the love that God has called us, show the love that God has called us to show in that. Guys, thank you so much for sharing your stories. I'm going to let you have a break. And if you guys could say thank you to them, this is big. So, like Emily said, you know, it's sometimes just in very tangible ways, going and offering a meal, offering to take their kids so they can just have space to work through their grief. This is just a time for our church right now to admit something. We have not done this well. Maybe you individually, but as a church as a whole, we have not acknowledged miscarriage as a loss the way that it actually is. I know I haven't. Up until 6 months ago, I was that person that just kind of crossed my fingers that my friend would get pregnant again so we didn't have to talk about it. And that's awful. And I'm so sorry because I feel like there's some people in here who have been hurt by my lack of care. So our church is going to do things differently starting now. And one of the things that we are going to do, if you miscarry and we find out about it, which I beg of you, don't hold back. Let us love you. We want to do this right. We want to do this well. We want to show you Jesus in it. If you miscarry and we find out about it, we're going to send you a plant. Why a plant? Because we want to give you the opportunity to do something tangible, to put something in the ground and care for it and see that as a memory. You can invite anybody into that. You don't have to plan it. It can just be you and your spouse. If you can invite your kids into it, you can invite your homework, your home group, your family, your friends. Do with it as you see fit. But we want to provide you the opportunity to acknowledge that loss in a tangible way. We also have a group of women and a group of men who have been through miscarriage before, and would like to reach out to you. And so, you know, if you need a shoulder to cry on, a listening ear, it doesn't matter. You're going to get a phone call, and you can do with it as you see fit. We just want to give you the opportunity. There's Stephen's ministry. If you've gone through this and you've hit a wall that you just can't see past emotionally, spiritually, and you need help, you need someone to come alongside and walk you through it, we have people who are trained and willing and able and desire to be there in it with you. And then Christian counseling, that's also an opportunity. And Jeff has a list of fully vetted counselors. Just let us know. Just know that we are going to do this better. We are going to do this right. The church is, God is good, and part of his goodness plays out in the church when the church does what it's supposed to do, and we are going to start doing what we're supposed to do. Right now, we're going to have a song. And while the song is playing, we're going to provide you an opportunity to acknowledge your loss in a tangible way. We have flowers, a variety of color and types up here, because every miscarriage is unique, every loss is unique. And so while the song is playing, if you are ready, and if you would like to, you can come up and pick a flower for your baby. And we have faces in front of the cross. And so you can take it to the cross. And if you don't want to do it alone, grab a hand. And if you don't have anyone here with you, we have people here that can be with you, that can pray for you. This is just going to be a time for our church to love each other well and to be a family, because that's what God wants. God wants the love to play out right here, right now. And so let's do that. God, thank you so much for being a good father, for life. And Father, I don't understand how you work and why you work the way you do, but I do trust that you are good, and I trust that you are perfect, and trust in your plan. And Father, I pray for the hearts of those who are hurting, who've experienced this loss. Father, I pray that just in this moment that you would be present in them, in their hearts, and that if we can, in a tangible way, be present for them, God, I pray that you'd use us in that way. Father, this would be a time of healing and a time of comfort and a time of love. In your name I pray. Amen.